to cover thy head or uncover thy head? That is the question. Welcome to the Faith Debate. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday morning to us, with us, rather. To us? What does that even mean? That's not even English. See, I went to public school. All the more motivation you might possibly need. Send your kids to public school. Never. Homeschool immediately. What are you thinking? Anyway, I'm Troy Skinner. I'm pastor of Household of Faith in Christ. Online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. The fact that I'm the pastor there, don't hold it against the church, please. And Daniel Rasvi with Conquered by Love Ministries, conqueredbylove.org, and also the church that meets at Imran's house. He's on the panel this week. David Forsey, the Whack-A-Mole Church, the house church that meets at a different member's home each and every weekend. It's a rotisserie league. It's like the traveling... team, like when you ever play basketball or soccer, yeah, or something.
It's like a random rotation.
And you were like,
you'll have trouble catching us.
Yeah, and you're just so anyway. So David, he keeps you guessing. He doesn't want you to. He's nimble. He wants to keep me on the keep moving, right?
Flexible.
Shuck and jive, right? Never know what he's up to. Anyway, and we're joined this week by the author of The Head Covering, Josiah Bongianni. Am I close?
You got it. Okay. Except it's you said Bongianni, right?
Bongianni.
You got it.
You know, by the time we record like a half dozen shows,
we're just going to be pronouncing his name over and over again.
All right. So I promised at the end of last week's episode, if you were listening last week, then you heard me give this promise. I'm not going to be derelict in my duty. You spell it because it's his website. So you got to know how to spell it to get to his website. So you want to go to www.josiahbongianni.com.
If you're Italian, did you already know how to spell that without having to ask?
Now, is this like the real last name of John Bon Jovi? Is his name like John Bongianni or whatever? Is that his real last name?
I have no idea, but I will point out I did put HTTPS there instead of www because W in Greek and Hebrew translates to 666. So I have a personal aversion to using www.
You don't have a personal aversion to using the interwebs?
But I got you covered.
Not yet.
Because www might translate to 666, but www does not. So you're good. You're covered either way.
Thank you.
Yeah, the back of his book, it does say https://. Is that considered a forward slash or a backslash? I don't know.
Backslash.
Then it's, again, I'm going to spell one last time. This is the only time I'm doing this. josiahbongianni.com.
Spelling it over and over is not going to help you pronounce it correctly, Troy.
and it's pronounced Bongianni. Bongianni. I'm going to be saying that in my sleep. He wrote a book called The Library Lesson, which you can check out as well. And the book we're talking about most specifically, though, here on the show today is The Head Covering. And if you missed last week's show, I'm going to reset the table real quickly. I mentioned Daniel Rasvi is on the panel. Daniel Rasvi is of the opinion that, it probably kind of is required. But only in church, which raises a question I want to ask you in just a second. And then there's Josiah. His opinion is, yes, anytime a woman is praying or prophesying, she should have her head covered with a cloth of some sort, and men should have their head uncovered. So if you're wearing a baseball cap like David Forsey is right now, you should take that cap off.
I'll take it off when I start prophesying.
And then David said that, yes, he's all about the women have their head covered, but not necessarily with a cloth, that he thinks that there's some cultural contextualization that covering means something different in today's, well, it might have meant the same thing back then. The application of it is different today than back then. That's the gist of, I think, what you were saying.
Yeah, the outward application may be different in appearance.
And my opinion is I don't have a strong opinion on this, and so
yet,
I haven't taken up sides just yet. I'm going to form one, though, and look out when I do. And so for now, for me, I've just made it an issue of personal conscience for the men and women to figure out on their own, and I'll give them whatever insight I can, but I don't know that I'm all that well-equipped on this particular question. So I have a question for you now in follow-up to last week's show and what I just said a second ago. I've been to the church that meets in Imran's house a number of times, probably 3, 4, 5 times now over the years.
Right.
And I know that there is a adult woman there who does wear a head covering. Mm-hmm. But I haven't noticed that most of the others are. So have you left it as a conscience issue?
When they're married, generally is what I would be say is.
So okay. So when they're married, that's when the requirement.
We don't require it in order to attend our church. But if somebody asks me my opinion on the topic, I'll tell them, and I'll preach about it.
Why not unmarried women?
I don't have a strong opinion on the married unmarried.
Okay, Josiah, do you?
I'm pretty confident about the married for sure. I'm not entirely convinced that it's unmarried, so that's what I would say.
Okay.
The reason I get the in church part is because the passage I read the passage in context as dealing with a lot of larger other church issues. He goes right after this right into the Lord's Supper and stuff, and he begins this verse 2 with the ordinances, and which I would say implies the this is a church service, a corporate worship setting. That's when it should be, and I would say, you know, a lot of people think this is so backwards, and why would you require women to do this? Well, most, maybe not most, but there are still many of congregations, many of pastors who would bristle at the thought of men wearing hats while they're leading others in prayer, but they don't want to make the women wear head coverings. So it seems like seems very hypocritical in that way. Now, as Josiah mentioned when I told him this a couple weeks ago, he said, yeah, but it's less and less. That's true. It is less and less. But it's funny that the women head coverings went away faster than the ball cap off to pray rule. You know, that's still there. I mean, if you sing the national anthem, you take your hat off. You know, there's a lot of respect associated with taking your hat off.
Correct.
And that's still in our culture, even though the women's head covering is mostly gone from our culture. So that, I think, is very interesting to discuss.
Now, David asked the question of Josiah in response to what Daniel just said. So, Josiah, do you make that same distinction between married and unmarried?
So, I do not. I do see the reason why Daniel would have that opinion. In Greek, the word for woman can actually be translated wife, or it can be translated just woman in general, like we use the word, where it can refer to virgin or married or divorced or whatever. So it can have both meanings, and about half the time it's right to translate it one way, and about the other half of the time in the Bible it's translated the other way.
So do you know in this passage is the word that, I mean, in the English Standard Version, which I have, it's translated woman in some parts of that passage and wife in other parts.
Yeah, so...
You know, in the Greek, is it consistent, same word throughout?
And David Forsey is referencing 1 Corinthians chapter 11, by the way.
Yeah.
Yes, 2 through 16. So as far as I understand, it's just the word gune throughout most of the passage in one form or another. The reason I would take the view that it applies to all women in general is because, actually, for three different reasons. One is that it says every woman here. So, for example, in verse 5, it says, but every woman who prays or prophesies with her head uncovered dishonors her head. It doesn't say just, Paul could have said married woman to try to make that clear, but instead he purposely uses the word every woman. And what is the purpose of doing so? But to perhaps say a woman of every rank, condition, of every age. So that's one of the big arguments. Also, if you look through the passage, there's a bunch of analogies used. For instance, if a woman is not willing to wear a head covering, it says she should be shaved. So she should have her hair removed to show her the shame that she should be experiencing if she doesn't wear a head covering when she's praying and prophesying. And that is something that equally applies, just like all the other analogies in this passage, equally apply to virgins as well as married women. So that's just a hint or another clue that the word should be applied to women of all ages. And
no, when you're saying women of all ages, so you're not saying females of all ages, so it would be post-puberty or little girls as well?
No, the word would not refer to little girls. It would just refer to post-puberty.
And how do we know when to make that distinction?
Their cycle begins? Is that what you would argue?
Something like that, or, you know, around 12 or 13, probably.
Okay, so is that culturally dependent?
Biologically dependent, maybe.
Okay. So, all right.
What is a woman?
What is a woman? That could lead us down trail. But I do want to throw in the third argument for why it would apply to women of all ages. And that is, and this is something the early Christian church points out. If you read, I don't know if you guys read like the Anti-Nicene Fathers at all, but Tertullian.
As I possibly can.
Okay. So these are like the very earliest church fathers that come right after like Paul and the biblical writers. So they're successors, in other words. And when they talk about head covering, Tertullian wrote an entire little a booklet on it, and he lived around the year 200 AD. And in his book, he points out that the church in Corinth that had received verbal instruction from Paul practiced, like all females, you know, above puberty, practiced head coverings, so virgins or married women. So that's the last argument.
Okay, what was, or what is, I guess, David Forsey, your reason for having a more nuanced, culturally contextualized view? Why is the Bible in general, and even more specifically, I guess, 1 Corinthians chapter 11, to be understood differently in today's American context than in back then's ancient Near Eastern context?
So part of it is because of the type of head covering is not, that isn't laid out for us. What type of head covering should it be? What should it look like? How should it fit?
I would say,
all of those things.
And I would say, I don't know, I'll let you finish your thought, but when I say head covering, I don't really care how it's covered. A hat
right.
is fine. Some other shawl, some more Mennonite style head covering. Actually, I don't find those as interesting. I prefer my wife to wear a hat or a Pakistani type shawl. But either way, you know, the type of head covering is not. But I think the point is that you're clearly covering your head, and it's not just hair. That's the point I would make, is hair doesn't count. So I don't know. Go ahead and finish your thought there.
No, I think that's the gist of it. Again, you know, displaying difference and place, right, or role, if you will, seems to be the thrust of the passage as far as what's being communicated. By having some sort of head covering. Just idea of thoughts on type of head covering. Because in between shows, at one point we'd said something about, you know, maybe Josiah, like a little piece of cloth, like that, like a token head covering, that doesn't count. So
well,
what does?
I would say the heart is what matters most, and if the heart of the person is, I don't want to wear a head cover, I just happen to be stuck in a church where I do, and so she deliberately okay. wears a really small head covering just to prove that she's doing as little as possible. I see that as a problem because of the heart state, but not because of the piece of cloth necessarily.
Okay, all right. So,
but otherwise, I don't think there's any problem with wearing any type of head covering. God doesn't say you have to wear a wireframe head covering with cheesecloth stretched across it. You can pretty much do as you want.
Okay.
In regard to women, of course.
Now, last week's episode, you mentioned, Josiah, specifically cloth. And now we're getting into more specifics of what we mean by the size of cloth, cell cloth, whatever. And one of the common things that gets brought up in these kinds of discussions on this topic has to do with hair. And Daniel made it a point to say, and hair doesn't count. But why not? Why doesn't hair count? Because some would argue... And I think if they were in the room, I can't make their arguments very well for them, but that sounds, I don't know if it's 100% persuasive, but it sounds reasonable. So why would it be like unreasonable to say, okay, they could be right?
Well, I think Josiah and I actually agree on this point, is you do hear a lot, if you go into a mainstream church and you say that women should be wearing their head coverings, the pastors will often retort that, well, I mean, yeah, they should have long hair. I mean, that's a covering. Bible says hair is given her as a covering, so that's good enough. And the whole point of that passage where the hair is given as a covering is to highlight that if she loses her hair, she's going to be so ashamed, and therefore you should also feel shame if you're praying without your head being covered. So if you're using it to make a point about a head covering, then it is not the head covering. The long hair cannot be the head covering. So just logically, the way this passage is laid out, because he's using long hair or short hair from women and men, he's saying, look, obviously you know that it's a shame to have long hair if you're a man. It's a shame to have short hair if you're a woman. So in the same way, it should also be a shame to not cover your head when you're praying, or to cover your head when you're praying, depending on men or women. And so I would say you can't read that passage honestly and come to the opinion that Paul was advocating that long hair could itself be the head covering that is acceptable. Otherwise... It just doesn't logically fit at all. So I just don't think it's intellectually consistent.
So that's why I would say hair doesn't count as the covering. But sure, yes, women should have long hair. That's something that Paul thought was so obvious he didn't even need to tell you. He just using it. Well, obviously you believe this. It's kind of like when Jesus said, "Hey, you see this sky is red, so you know it's gonna, you know, it's gonna be a good day tomorrow, or whatever, because you read the signs in the weather." That wasn't Jesus giving a meteorological, teaching. He was to say, "Well, obviously you know this, therefore this other thing that I'm trying to tell you." So that's why I say,
is the woman who's not wearing a head covering sinning?
I would say yes, if she is aware of the passage and has, and you know, realizes that she's supposed to practice it, but deliberately chooses not to. If she is not aware of the passage or has been, you know, taught in her church that it's not applicable, I do not think it could be count. It could be technically sin because it's a transgression of law, but I don't think it would be imputed to her as sin. Like, she wouldn't be necessarily guilty.
Is it an offense that would be? In your church, they require head coverings, right?
Yes.
If a woman started showing up for worship and said, "You know what? I've been reading 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and the rest of the Bible, and I've become completely persuaded in my conscience that that argument doesn't amount to a hill of beans. Yeah. My conscience informs, I love this church, and I don't want to have to leave this church, but my conscience tells me that I shouldn't be required to wear anything on my head." And she persists in that opinion, would that be an excommunicatable offense?
So it's difficult for me to say exactly what my church leaders would do. I would say it should be an excommunicatable offense if, you know, the person came into the church with that knowledge and purposely goes against the doctrines of the Bible that's recognized by the church. However, I think my church would remove her from membership. I don't know if that counts necessarily as complete excommunication or not. Like,
well, removal from membership, I mean, I assume in the Mennonite tradition would mean removal from the ability to take communion.
Yes.
Okay.
But yeah. I'm not saying that necessarily she would be shunned, which is also possibly part of excommunication, okay. Depending on what persuasion.
She would be treated like an attending unbeliever.
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you could definitely not retain membership in the church and refuse to wear a head covering. Yes.
At least in the church service.
I feel like...
At least, at home, in public, you know,
yeah, I mean, she could take it off when she's not praying or prophesying or something. She wouldn't be excommunicated for that.
I feel like we should spend some time, going over, okay, why is it, you know, that that some people see wearing an actual physical head covering as like what does that symbolize? Why is that so important?
Well, I would just point out that if you go back a few hundred years, things were quite different back in that time, and we didn't have like female pastors and stuff back then. It wasn't, you know, women in high positions of leadership. There was no possibility of a woman being like president of the United States. And personally, I would go back to that time, and head covering is actually the symbol of what people recognized at that point. Is like, there's an order of authority. It's God the Father. This is actually in the head covering passage in 1 Corinthians 11, the first 16 verses. But it mentions that God the Father is in a position of authority over Christ. That doesn't make Christ inferior, but he is in a position of authority over him. Christ is in a position of authority over man, and man over woman. And so that's what the head covering is supposed to symbolize, that woman is in submission to man. And so it's actually a very countercultural statement. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
No, I mean, it definitely was very common until quite recently, and it was a lot of the women's lib movement that really pushed this. And that's the one thing that says to me, you know, I think we really should be very serious about the head covering issue, because it wasn't that the church leaders and various pastors of different denominations came up with the doctrine is no longer necessary. It was more of this was women always were wearing head coverings, at least to church services, and they always wore hats to church until this whole women's suffrage thing, and now we get the right to vote, now we're equal to men, now we're the same, we're better than men, and also we're not going to wear head coverings because men don't wear hats to church, why should we? So it came out of that, and then the church kind of say, oh, well, I guess I'm... Are we really going to excommunicate you for that? No, I mean, you're just doing your silly little fad thing. And then it caught on. And now that nobody wears them anymore. So I feel like it wasn't that there were some doctrinal or theological debates in the church over the issue, and most of them came to the conclusion it wasn't necessary. It was that the women's lib movements forced their hand when they were marching for suffrage, and then they also didn't wear hats to church, but they kept going to church, and that the pastors just decided there were more, kind of like you said, Troy, more pressing topics that need to be discussed in church services, and they didn't bother to continue that teaching. So that's where I feel like the modern culture of head coverings came out of that. So I would be very cautious to say that because our culture dictates this, then that should really inform. I'm cautious in that regard anyway, but there are cultural differences. I just don't feel like this is one of those that's on the good side.
So first wave feminism was burning of the head coverings, and second wave feminism was burning of other things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just would like to throw in 1968, the National Organization for Women, also known as NOW, actually hosted like a public burning of head coverings because they were so against the topic. They're like, they recognized it as a symbol of what they called female subjection to males. And so they were like, let's burn these things to show our protest against doctrine.
I didn't even know that happened.
But it was not common necessarily for women of all denominations to just always wear hats all the time. Different cultures have had various opinions on that, and there have been theological debates in the church history about whether you need to wear it all the time or only when in the church or only when praying or whatever.
Right.
But if you're supposed everybody to be, agreed that when you go to church, you wear a hat.
If like, you're supposed to be praying without ceasing, then maybe you should wear it all the time.
So that's been the argument, praying without ceasing, right? But everybody agreed until very recently that, of course, when you go to church, you wear a hat. That's what you do. Mm. And if you're a man, of course, you don't wear a hat. And there are many women that would also wear hats in public, like in public occasions, and maybe not when exercising or when doing chores around the house or things like that, depending on their cultural tradition. That may be something that the Anabaptist movement has always held to. I'm not sure. Josiah, you could speak to that. But that would be more of a cultural and theological debate, I think. But whether you should wear them at all in church, that seems to never have been up for debate at all for 2,000 years until the women's lib movement.
I'll just point out there is a striking similarity to the whole Mormon movement, because Joseph Smith's book came out, Book of Mormon, and you know there's a new cult that comes in, and kind of the same thing up till about the same time in history. Most, you know, almost all women wore head coverings, and men removed them when praying or prophesying, or in church at least. And things changed at about that point. I mean, a lot of things changed, not just that.
Yeah, and I don't know if we have time to get into all of this, but another thing you'll hear people talk about is what's being talked about here as the covering of the head is spiritual. Mm-hmm. You should have your head spiritually covered, meaning you should be under the leadership, the authority of your husband, the male elders of the church, the pastor, that sort of thing, that's what's being talked about. You guys reject that out of hand?
I guess probably the argument would be made that the physical symbol is a symbol of that spiritual authority.
Right. Well, it's just like baptism doesn't save you. It's a profession. It's a public showing that you have been saved. But the baptism itself doesn't save you. It's the same thing. The head covering is not the authority. It's just showing that you are under authority.
Or communion. The idea of it being that it's an outward expression.
Yes, the Eucharist is not the literal blood of Christ. Yeah. Christ is not dying again and spilling his literal blood for us every time we take communion.
Yeah. And my question is why shouldn't that be? Why shouldn't that symbol of structure be all the time? Right.
So you would recommend it to be all the time?
I would recommend whatever symbol is representing the spiritual truth should be all the time.
So not necessarily echoing.
Correct.
Well, I'll just point out, I do mention this in my book, but in the military, there's, you know, different ranks and stuff, and they have different insignia that military members wear, but they don't have to wear it all the time necessarily. It's like sometimes if they're on vacation, they don't. So in a similar manner, in 1 Corinthians 11, it says the head covering is to be worn when praying or prophesying. So that's the times that God requires it. I don't mind if people go beyond that and wear it more if they so desire, if they want to make a statement all the time, that's fine. But it's not required according to Scripture.
And we're going to put a wrap on this episode with those comments from Josiah Bone Jawani. He is the author of The Head Covering. You can find that on Amazon, or you can go to his website, josiahbonejawani.com. David Forsey, Daniel Razvi, area pastors, thank you for being on the panel again. I'm Troy Skinner, pastor of Household of Faith in Christ, online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Encourage you to pay attention to what we're doing here on the Faith Debate, see what's coming up in future shows, or access past shows and the podcast through the website of WFMD.com. There's a Faith Debate page there. Or you can link to all things related to this show, and you can even link to Conquered by Love Ministries, the Razvi thing. You can even see this beautiful man behind me to my right, David Forsey, his picture. You can see all of that sort of stuff. It's a one-stop shop. householdoffaithinchrist.com is a place to find all of that. So anyway, we'll continue this conversation next week on the Faith Debate, 167 and a half hours from now. Till then, God bless.